A 2013 study of Michigan's 15 public universities shows a cumulative economic impact of around $24 billion. Hundreds of millions of that is contributed by the Upper Peninsula's three state universities, whose importance to the region extends well beyond spending. We'll take up that and other topics with the UP's state university presidents next on Media Meet. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm your host, Bill Hart. Our guests are Northern Michigan University President Fritz Erickson, Michigan Technological University President Glenn Mraz, and Lake Superior State University President Thomas Plager. With me on the panel, Mining Journal reporter Jackie Stark. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Let's look at some of the basic facts over the past decade here. The economic impact of your three institutions combined is about $450 million. As of 2012, with some variable factors, it might actually be higher. Yet funding has shifted in recent years to rely more on students. There's a 6% increase for universities in the latest state budget, but funding for the universities declined by more than 19% between fiscal years 2004 and 2014. So what's been the general effect on faculty and programs of this varying sort of state support?
I think what's happened across the Midwest and the Great Lakes is this pattern of universities, public universities that were traditionally over half funded by state support, mm-hmm. to now being predominantly funded by tuition, and consequently tuition has gone up. When I was in college, started in the late 80s, and attending University of Wisconsin campuses, the state was paying more than half of my cost to go to school. My parents, it was two-thirds, and now we're down to a third or a quarter, depending upon where you are. In Michigan or Wisconsin. And the consequence of that is it's forced universities to be much tighter with their spending. And it's made us made it difficult for us to stay, I think, nationally competitive with our faculty salaries. That's a chronic problem that I hear across higher ed and is something that we're sensitive to at our institution. We've just had to become much more cautious stewards of taxpayer money and also looking to diversify our revenue streams. I think most public higher eds are headed in that direction of trying to find additional sources of revenue to make up for the cuts in state spending.
Okay. Planning to figure out what's core and what's not core to the mission of the university has been a key for us, because when we look at the state appropriation, it's actually been cut by about 31%. We lost somewhere just north of $15 million. But at the same time, our students lost about $3.5 million in financial aid. So the impact there has been great. And I think the universities, to a large part, have tried to make that up for the students. I know when the Promise grants went away, for example, we backfilled because we knew that families had counted on that money, and it got taken away in the middle of the year. So really, prioritization is probably the key word for all of us in terms of deciding what's really important at the university. And those discussions can be pretty tough sometimes.
Okay. Dr. Erickson, you're pretty new to Northern, but had you seen this in your own experience in other places?
Yes, I have. And having been in Michigan for some time, I've seen this pattern over a period of years. One of the real concerns that I have is the growing debt that our students have taken on as a direct result of some of these cuts. We work very, very hard to control our tuition costs. We work very hard to keep the costs for our students down as much as we can. But even with those efforts, we have seen the amount of debt that our students taking on getting to a level that is increasingly difficult for families.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. In the meantime, Governor Snyder is sort of is encouraging everybody to hold the line on tuition and fees. To receive increases in 2015, you have to hold any increases in tuition down to 3%. Nationally, student loan debt averages $30,000. At Michigan's public universities, it's $27,000 on average. But I looked up the figures recently reported for your schools, and at Tech it's 33,000, NMU 29,000, and Lake State 28,000. So what can or should universities do to lower that margin? Are you doing all you can now, or is there something that might, some magic bullet?
I think we need to make certain we have sufficient financial aid available on campus, and that's what everyone is trying to do, is offset the decline in state support with some other funding mechanism, particularly to make universities accessible to first-generation family students. I think that's where the greatest pinch is for our citizens, our families that are coming from a background where there isn't a college experience or a college history to navigating the college environment and figuring out how to pay for it. And so we need to make certain we have additional scholarship options, financial aid options for our students. And so searching for private support through our foundations to supplement financial aid packages with private scholarship monies is a big focus of universities now. We're reaching out to our alumni and to potential supporters of the university because we know those gifts make tremendous differences to first-generation college students, that 27,000 29,000 it's the cost of an expensive new car. Doesn't sound like a lot in terms of the return, but if you're a first-generation college student from modest family backgrounds in terms of earning power, that's a huge dollar figure to contemplate of going into debt.
Okay. And I think the key thing there is that one of the difficulties with college loans is if people don't finish. That's where it really becomes a problem, because we look at our students who finish, and we're kind of a unique situation because our graduates' starting salaries are very high, so the average cost of the loan payments on a yearly basis is somewhere between 3.2 and 3.5% of starting salary.
That's very good.
When I talk to legislators, I always point out that the state tax that they will pay is more than that, and this was an investment the students made in themselves. So it's
and the federal government's trying to peg that down to 10%.
Yeah.
So that's a very reasonable. Seems like a very reasonable return.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I think there are really two additional points. One is the single thing that we can do to help our students control student debt is to control the time to degree. Because anybody that's had their child go to college, every semester longer they spend in college is a semester of additional room and board and books and iPads and all of those kinds of expenses. So if we can develop strategies to help students have more credits as they come to our universities to help control the time to degree, those are some activities that can really make a big difference in the lives of students and their families.
Go ahead.
One of the ways to help combat the overall cost of college is to get students college credit before they even get into the university. High school students coming in with credits already, they're going to be in school less time, which goes to your point. NMU's looking at working on a middle college with some local high schools. What are some ways, I guess, that you can help get college credit before they even get to college?
Well, I think there's a number of strategies, and I think it can vary from school district to school district, university to university. But when we can have direct partnerships with either dual enrollment opportunities where students can take classes that count both in high school and for college credit and do our normal college classes, say in their senior year, that can have a big impact. There are opportunities in the summer to do that. And there's certainly opportunities to reach out and support students who are looking at the skilled trades and how that might provide them opportunities for additional credit to be able to move through post-secondary education in as timely a fashion as possible.
One of the things that was really interesting and is that there's a group of presidents in the UP from private and the public colleges and the community colleges that meet, and the whole idea of reverse transfers came out of that group, and we were really the first people in the state to do that, so that the transition from community colleges to the universities became more seamless because the students could take classes at the universities, transfer them back to the community college and get their degrees. Now the legislature has proclaimed that we have to do that, but we were doing it in the UP just kind of on a handshake deal way before that, just because the president get along well.
I think the other thing that we can do as higher ed leaders is work with our institutions to create more comfortable and streamlined pathways for students coming with credit from other institutions. The clear change in the student background that is occurring all over the United States are students are coming from a much more diversified background of either having previous experience through their high school earning college credit, transfer credit, or some credit if they're an adult for prior learning. And so universities need to think about how do you accept a student that's coming to you with credit from another institution, whether it be they earned it at the high school level or they earned it online or they earned it in some other mode. How do we create an avenue for that student to be successful and to gain the maximum return on that investment that they made at another institution? I don't think we can think about making our students stay all 4 years with us, the majority having that experience that 20 years ago was the norm.
Well, on a transfer student, for example, you know, these credits have to be evaluated. If they're coming from all these different sources and there doesn't seem to be some overarching rationale for it, I mean, you know, rationale of how they're evaluated, how do you go about it?
I think it has to be faculty driven. Mm-hmm. The faculty are the intellectual capital of the institution. They're the ones that know what is sufficient for content. And key to that, what I always tell students is wherever you take any college credit, save your syllabus. Okay. And bring it with you, because that is the document that faculty in a department or a school are going to look at to evaluate, does this meet our expectations as the university that the student's transferring to? And we can do that individually, but I think also in Michigan there needs to be higher ed institutions coming together and having those discussions around the transfer agreements to make certain that we're all on the same page of how we're going to take credit, particularly from other public universities or community colleges in this state.
Okay. All of us have wonderful agreements with many colleges and universities across Michigan and beyond. The macro agreements that are in place, the opportunities to transfer, really do work well in this state. Not perfect, and there's always work to do, but I'm really pleased to see my colleagues at all the institutions looking very seriously at how we continue those kinds of efforts, because we all recognize the importance that is for our students.
Yeah, there's one other piece of this student loan issue that I think gets lost a lot, and that's that a lot of students are going on beyond the bachelor's degree, and they are borrowing to do that. I think one of the things that students saw in the economic downturn and it was that if you had an advanced degree, you were better off than if you didn't. And so that experience for a lot of students has really driven home a point that you know, if when you're done going to school, you're really not done going to school. And continuing to go to school, whether it's for a professional degree, if it's for a master's degree, whether it's for a doctor of physical therapy degree, whatever, those things really set you up for life, and they're probably worth the investment of both your time and your money at this point in time.
Okay. We seem to be talking about students who are our candidates here. They're pretty well organized and motivated. It turns out that right now, as the number of what used to be called minorities becomes the majority, you find out that they've, in the statistics, it appears that a lot of the people who are there in the pool are less well off. Consequently, it becomes more important to do things like need-based grants and other sorts of planning for these people. Those grants have gone down 20% in Michigan in the past 10 years. There's been some states have raised those grants as much as 85%. I know there are tuition waivers and other things that are significant. What do you think the lay of the land is there, and where should it be?
Well, I think the question that ultimately the state of Michigan should ask and all the legislators that are interested in higher ed is what do we want to do as a state to drive up college attainment levels in the state. We know it's good for the economy. We know it's good for the overall health of the state. There's greater participation in government. Across the board, every state, the higher the college attainment level, the higher the prosperity of the state. So if that is truly a goal and a worthwhile pursuit, what mechanisms have to be in place to increase access for underserved populations? And by underserved, that's first generation students, minority populations, people who traditionally have not thought about a university or higher ed or don't have immediate access to it through their families and support.
Not a lot of family history there.
Yeah, and we need to create scholarship opportunities, financial aid packages, work study opportunities, and also universal maybe incentive to bring these folks to our campus at a younger age to get an idea of what universities offer in terms of long-term opportunities in one's lives. I mean, that's really what the value of the investment is you're going to make more, you're probably going to have less of a chance of being unemployed, but higher education opens opportunities that people don't traditionally have otherwise.
And windows on the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really commend the governor for his Talent 2025 initiative. I think it's the right thing to do for the state, with the goal of 60% of our state's population having some post-secondary education. The challenge is the system we have in place now. It's very difficult to meet all of that unless we do two things, unless we find ways to better partner with one another. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things I've learned in my short time here in the Upper Peninsula is we have great colleagues at our public and private institutions, both four-year and two-year institutions, mm-hmm. that really get that collaboration and connection. The other piece is to being able to connect with the business community, because there's a lot of education that goes on within the business community that we should find ways in which students can have credit, have it applied towards mm-hmm. Stepping forward in a variety of degrees.
Okay. Fritz makes a great point. The President's Council that consists of the 15 universities partnered with the Business Leaders for Michigan starting 3 years ago, I think, basically because they had needs and they came kind of shoulder by shoulder with the universities and said, you know, if we want to build Michigan, we have to rebuild higher education in the state. We got to rebuild support. And the Business Leaders for Michigan have been really important in really making the point that this is critical for Michigan's future to have an educated populace.
I just mm-hmm. make a follow-up comment that I'm coming from a state, Wisconsin, where over the last decade there have been routine, regular cuts to the University of Wisconsin system's budget. Michigan's turned the page. This is the first year, I think, in recent history where there's a reinvestment, and it really signals, in my mind, the thought process of the legislature and of the governor that reinvesting in higher education is good for the state. And although it's a modest reinvestment, we're going in the right direction of returning state support to public access institutions and public universities. And we all hope that trend continues because it's going to help drive down the overall tuition cost, or at least hold it. Yeah. If states reinvest in us.
Well, I know if you ask anyone, the executive up there, they're telling you, they're trying to tell you that the secret to jobs is talent, and that whatever you can do to develop talent in the state is going to tell us what the future is going to look like. So I think I think everybody seems to be in agreement there. There's some changes. Well, we've talked about one end of the thing, which is mostly opportunity. What about placement? It's reported that one in six college graduates are underemployed, generally working outside their field of study for much lower wages. The higher you go, the better off you are, it seems. The millennials are especially hard hit. These are usually people born after 1988. The effective U6 unemployment rate, which adjusts for labor force participation and underemployment, that sort of thing, even those who have given up work, is about 15.1%, just staggering for that group. These are 18 to 29-year-olds. And the U3 rate alone, which is the normal unemployment rate, is 10.3%. That's really high. There may not be any strict obligation for universities to provide guidance and placement for services to graduates. I imagine there are very good reasons for that. But what is being done, and what's the record for schools, you think, represented in Michigan?
I can
go ahead.
Start off. We run a career fair in the fall, and it's open to students from across the UP, and we get a lot of the students from Northern that come to that. But last year, we had over 900 recruiters from 264 companies come to campus. They conducted 4,600 interviews in 3 days following that. The demand is amazing because, as most of the listeners or the viewers will know, that Houghton really isn't on the way to any place. You know, you just don't stop by. You know, it's kind of a destination place. But companies, everybody from Caterpillar to GM to Target are coming to campus looking for people who have talent. And it's critical. Our placement rates have been running 94%. And during the Depression, the recession, they dipped down to 87%, but they've rebounded. So it's been good.
Go ahead.
Lake State has an interesting mix of technical and professional programs, as well as liberal arts programs, and our engineering, the health sciences, nursing in particular. Those programs, as well as criminal justice and fire science, do have significantly high placement rates because employers are coming there to seek out our graduates. And those are degrees that are designed to go right into the workforce in that discipline that someone is receiving the degree in. I think there, though, needs to be some thought that someone who's getting a job in a field that's not related to their degree isn't necessarily a failure. And when you think of English, you think of political science, you think of certain disciplines, there are many jobs available to students with those degree backgrounds that don't have that in their title.
Sure.
And people need to realize that there are some college paths that are tied directly to a job related to the major in terms of name, and there are others where it's less obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to keep in mind, and also important to realize that we can't always focus on the immediate need and try to predict what does the future look like in terms of job opportunities. We want to create artists, creative people, people who can use their talent base and skills to go in a whole variety of directions with their careers. So that's something we need to keep in mind. I'm concerned that some states are doing the opposite.
Yeah, I know. Just what you're saying. I think the there was a tome written once years ago by Thomas Kuhn called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And in it, he points out that these revolutions usually came from people outside of the field.
Yeah.
So innovation frequently takes a different path.
And the STEM that so many people have gotten used to hearing about, more recently people are talking about STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. You know, directly to your point that you take somebody like Da Vinci, you know, he's brilliant in so many ways, and that's what we see on our campuses as students who are brilliant in so many ways.
And broadly educated at the base, I think, is important.
I think an additional piece to this puzzle is the idea that we are collectively producing a generation of students that's not only prepared to take a great job, but prepared to create a great job. And that's really become a focus for all of our institutions. We collaborate, whether it's through the Smart Zone or other kinds of activities, really promoting mechanisms so a student that comes out has the ability to think about the kind of job that they want to create. And that's, I think, particularly important for us here in the Upper Peninsula, because I talk to so many of our students, so many of our graduates, and the number one thing that they want is to stay in the Upper Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And so helping support those efforts is a very important thing for us.
It's not incidental that, you know, when you hear about research corridors and Automation Alley and you talk about research triangles, that we are the innovation shore for that reason that Fritz just mentioned, because people do love living here.
And it's great that we have three public universities that I think complement one another. A small...
They certainly do. I mean, they're very different.
Yeah, a small institution that's a blend of liberal arts and technical education, and my two colleagues that have institutions with graduate programs and larger in size and an array of PhD programs and professional programs at Michigan, and the fact that they're all along this shoreline in the Upper Peninsula provide opportunities for our citizens and really stimulate the economy. And I'm excited to work with my colleagues here because I see opportunity to collaborate and work together to combine our resources to better the area and to make Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, a better place.
I think one of the questions that's coming to light a lot now, national unemployment and employer demand is now focusing more attention on career and technical education. Jack, you probably know a lot more about this than I do. It's reported that 70% of the jobs most in demand in the current economy don't require a baccalaureate degree, and there are a lot of people with less than a two-year degree making a lot of money. You know, they of course can earn more as a four-year graduate, but in most cases. But we've got 75,000 jobs in Michigan unfilled because of skilled trades. Do you see a potential to dovetail with your programs in career and technical education focus in public schools?
I think so. I talked a little bit earlier about the partnerships that we look to have with the K-12 community. I think that's a very important piece of it. The other piece is the idea of building laddered programs, where you have opportunities for students to come in and earn certificates. And maybe that's done in 6 months, maybe that's done in a year, mm-hmm. but have a very, very precise set of skills to go out. And if that's your path, great, and forward you move. But you want to make sure that if the next step fits, and mm-hmm. so it ladders directly into an associate degree, which ladders into a bachelor's degree, and then certainly on to graduate school. And so by creating a system where you have all these various steps, you really do address this, and you provide opportunities to make sure that students, when they enter post-secondary education, that they will come out with some very marketable skills.
Are you seeing some success in this in the
Lake State offers a wide array of certificate programs, associate degree programs, and I think what my colleague just mentioned that's critical is making certain that none of those opportunities are terminal ending opportunities in higher ed, that they articulate to another program so that maybe someone earns a certificate, goes into the workforce, then sees the value of coming back for an associate mm-hmm. degree and then a baccalaureate degree and maybe even a graduate degree, and to create as clear of a pathway of opportunities for students all the way from high school so they're thinking about what their options are and realize you don't have to immediately invest 4 years right away if you don't want to, or go into the military and come back. We're seeing more veterans coming to our mm-hmm. campuses. We need to provide access for them. So I think that's very important. And our blend is this unusual mix of technical, professional, and liberal arts in a very small setting. So I think that's a growth area for us, associate degrees and certificates, more so than perhaps what we've offered in the past.
Okay, I'm afraid we're out of time. We've been talking about higher education with the presidents of the Upper Peninsula's public universities, Northern Michigan University's Fritz Erickson, Michigan Technological University's Glenn Mraz, and Lake Superior State University's Tom Plager. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.